Welcome back, everybody. We have a very important question for you. Here at Brainstorm Brewery, and we realized, we learned recently, we have a new fan, at least one, who started listening recently. So I'm Corbin. Jason's a lot of asshole. DJ's the kid who dropped out of college. That's all you need to know. We'll go with that. But for everyone listening, we do have an important question. What was better, Cookie Clicker or Cat President? That's what we need to answer.
Was Cat President a meme on this podcast?
Yeah, I think it was an After Hours. So that's lost on everybody.
It was
nice job.
It was an After? No way. Look, and it wasn't lost on everybody. It was definitely not lost on everybody.
Corbin, you don't know. You've never listened to an episode of this podcast in your whole life.
That's true. I've listened to every episode of this. I'm the college dropout. Jason's the alcoholic, and then Corbin's
I'm not an alcoholic, all right? I could stop anytime I want the DTs to kill me.
As the clinking in the background increases.
No, don't worry. You guys can't see it, but I also cheers to the camera there. Wow. No, anyway, so the reason we're talking about this and we decided to, you know, argue over which one was better before the cast is that episode 300 is coming up. You might think it was next week just because this is 299.
But you'd be wrong.
Yeah, you would be wrong.
Episode 200 Part 2 still hasn't come out. So if you think we're going to release episode 300 in the 2018 calendar year,
that's optimistic.
We're going to try to make that a thing.
We are going to try to do that. Anyway, so what we want to do for episode 300 is the first couple have been all about sort of us, right? And the moments we find funny and like to make fun of each other for, and we play them all back and listen to them. If you haven't listened to episode 100 or 200, it's a lot of fun. You should do it. But for 300, we don't want it to be about what we think is good. We want to know what our listeners, our patrons' favorite memories are of the show. So what we're asking is that anybody who wants to, who's a patron of the cast, even if it's just a dollar, if you want to send in a video clip or an audio clip, just describing your favorite memory, and let us share it on the cast. That's what we'd like to do. And then we can go back and play what you're talking about and et cetera, et cetera. And we'll see, you know, what we think is funny. It's what everyone else thinks is funny.
That was such a thinly veiled attempt to get out of all of the work. I'm so proud of you that you at least put a little bit of, like, modicum of, like, pushing the responsibility elsewhere. Like, I'm glad.
You're welcome, DJ. Yeah.
It would have been too obvious if you had just been like, you guys need to do all the work, but you put just enough of a spin on it that nobody will know.
Well, I do have a PR degree.
Do they want to be featured on our podcast or not? Do some work, idiots. If you're not a patron, just send us an email at brainstormbrewery@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And then we'll just tell us a thing.
We'll do something with the emails for sure.
Yeah, but if you're not a patron, don't send us an audio clip, but send us a memory, something that you like.
Hey, man, if somebody wants to send us an audio clip, go for it.
What? Don't contradict me. We talked about this before the cast, and then you're getting on here and it's like, oh, we all agreed on this, and then you're like, bah! Now this is a live recording.
We're going to have, like, one person send in a clip.
That's great. That makes it really easy for us.
So it's already
we'll talk
Patreon
about that person
tier.
For 15 minutes, and everyone else will envy them for they did the smallest amount of work.
That's right, because people who get talked about on our podcast are they're to be envied, right? Because we're so nice and compliment them so much.
It's like Corbin with winning radio contests. There's so few people competing with you for this position that like
right,
you're
guys.
Guaranteed to get it.
I got a story for you about winning stuff.
No, that's not a good story.
No, it's going to be.
No, all it's right. Not. You know how I know? You know how I know we're not going to hear a good story? Corbin goes, hey, I got a story about that. And we're talking about something really stupid and mundane.
This happened last weekend. This is fresh. So I had a friend who was turning like 28. So for his birthday, we decided to be hip and cool and we go to Dallas. And he wants to go. He signs us up for a murder mystery dinner. Have you guys ever done one of those?
Yeah, and I didn't have to drive all the way to freaking Dallas to do it.
Well, we were doing more in Dallas. So you sit down, and we walked in. The actors, right, the like six or seven of them are all in costume, like because it's the 1800s in Texas or whatever. And I was like, this might be kind of lame. And you know what? We sat down.
Right.
We had a really expensive dinner. We had some overpriced and mediocre wine. And I was right. It was quite lame. But the important
you're telling me the Texas panhandle isn't famed for its Pinot Noir grapes?
We were not. Well, you know. So
you had bad wine in Texas? No way.
Anyways, at the end, my team successfully figured out who the killer was because it was a murder mystery. And then, unbeknownst to me, because I'm sitting there being like, my God, this costs like $150 between drinks, dinner, and tickets. They're like, here's the four teams that won, and the winner of the grand prize, which is these shirts that say, we figured it out. I'm like, oh, well, this is just a disaster. What the? But then they go, the winner also gets four free tickets to go see Tracy Byrd in concert next weekend.
I don't know who
that is. I don't
even
know who that is.
It's a country music act from the 1990s, and it was my jam.
That sounds the opposite of a prize.
It was going to be so great. I was so excited, and then we didn't win. Like, we figured out who the killer was, however other teams did as well, and then someone else won the tickets.
Jason figured out the murder mystery that you killed this fucking podcast.
Right? I knew this would happen.
I thought you would like that story.
Who killed the momentum? Why, it was Corbin in his living room.
I'm in my office. Come on now.
It's also in your living room because we heard fucking, like, utensils and shit clinking and you slurping beforehand.
That's just a beer, bro. You heard me, like, popping the top, you know?
He drinks his beer with a soup spoon. It's called the Oklahoma Shuffle.
Why is it a shuffle?
I don't know. I didn't name it. You think I came up with the name the Oklahoma Shuffle? It's a dumb name, but, like, it was so dumb that it stuck with me, and I remember that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, right. Would you, if someone told you that drinking beer with a spoon was called the Oklahoma Shuffle, would you ever forget that? No, that little tidbit would be stuck up here, and then it would come out at an inopportune moment.
Hey, have you guys ever heard of, speaking of things that you might consider Southern, have you ever heard of a Prager Kegger?
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
So hold up, DJ, where do you think, what do you think a Prager Kegger is, and what would you consider it, like, do you think that's an Oklahoma thing or what?
No, it's not, because friend of the cast, Dana Roach from the EDH Reg podcast was telling me that his relatives from, like, Wisconsin were doing a Prager Kegger in northern Michigan. What? Northern Michigan being the south of the north. I don't know.
Thanks, Jason.
I think it's just a poor people thing.
Thanks, Jason. I set it up. It was a softball. DJ was going to run right into it, and you just ruined it.
Oh, so you were trying to be like, yeah, Southern people are the worst, am I right? But
look, here's the thing. All I needed to do was give DJ a little bit of a runway, a little push, a running start, and he's going to start going on about how stupid Oklahoma is, how it's the worst state, because Prager Kegger, blah, blah, and then I was going to be like, bam, just kidding, it was Jason's state of Michigan. Tell me, how is the Upper Peninsula of Michigan not Michigan?
It's just not. It's like the Florida Keys aren't part of Florida because the Keys are classy. It's sort of like that. Like
how New York City is not part of New York.
Like how Oklahoma City is not part of Oklahoma?
No, not at all.
Oh.
It's like if Oklahoma had like a weird growth attached to it where like people from Mexico lived and like everyone, even the white people that lived there, like, spoke Spanish, and it would be, like, a weird part of Oklahoma that's not really Oklahoma, and you'd be like, yeah, that's Western Oklahoma or whatever.
That's, like, Southwest 23rd Street.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to describe the Upper Peninsula of Michigan,
like,
but
that exists. There is a part of Oklahoma City where it is all Hispanic, and therefore all the signs and everything are in Spanish.
Okay, then it would be like they all spoke French or something weird. All right, like
there
that.
You go. That's a little better.
It's the part of Michigan that's Canada.
Well, now you're talking shit on Canada? I am offended, buddy.
Yeah, but it's like Canada in the 1970s.
I don't
like you drive across the bridge
have
and you're like
meaning to me.
We're not that old, Jason.
Well, just imagine it's 1970. Imagine if you went to a place and looked around, you're like, is it 1970? And they'd be like, nah, it's UP.
So what you're saying is you're trying to dodge responsibility for your state hosting what is called a Prager Kegger, where a pregnant woman does a keg stand, if I understand the story correctly.
Weren't they all Wisconsinites?
I don't know, man. I just know it happened in Michigan.
Oh, okay.
The only thing the only context knowledge I have about the Upper Peninsula of Michigan is the fact that you have a bridge that involves ice guillotines, and I just think that's badass.
That is absolutely correct.
They wouldn't even let me do the gauntlet. I'm like, can I just take my own life in my hands?
This is like the Winterfell of Michigan. It's like icy and shitty and surrounded by impassable terrain, and everyone there is an idiot.
Yeah, and everybody Jason's that just trying works to play there that, is that, fucking Sam Tarly and won't let me take the bridge.
Yeah, Jason's just trying to play that one level of Super Mario Bros. Where you have to run by all the stompers really fast and, like, they're not letting him.
He's just trying to frogger his way across the bridge. Anyways, well, you ruined the story. It was going to be a great story.
Was it going to be a great... You've told two bad stories on this podcast. Can we just...
That was a good story. You're just mad that you didn't get to tell it.
It was...
This should be after hours.
This is... That's fine.
No, this is the podcast. Yeah.
If this were funny or, like, at all endearing, this would have been after hours. If you don't know what after hours is, then you're obviously not one of the people that went to patreon.com/brainstormbrewery. Gave us $20 every month so that you could have access to our weird, uncensored, outtake-type stuff. We go on these weird tangents for 20 minutes sometimes, and we're like, that can't make the podcast. But it makes for good radio for the people that want to hear what we're like when the cameras aren't precisely rolling.
Yeah, so, when we know we are not when we have plausible deniability if we need it.
Well, no, because allegedly some of the past after hours have been about necrophilia... ice guillotines.
Whatever it is you and your wife do.
BDSM, cookie clicker. One of these is not like the other.
Yeah, exactly right.
Sometimes
I'll listen to an after hours and be like, why did that get released?
Sometimes Jason goes on weird movie rants about something that happened in the 1980s that neither Corbin and I are aware of.
Yeah.
Those are always great.
Mighty Ducks was 1992.
Hey, I'm always in for Mighty Ducks.
So, you can also get one of these handsome drinking glasses that I'm chugging out of right now at that $20 level.
I'm surprised you didn't do the bit where you don't know what the level is. You're like, oh, it's at the 1842 level.
It's not a bit, DJ.
In euros. That's how many yen you have to give us. Is
1842 in euros really $20?
No, it's significantly less, but that's the...
Wait, what? Euros are worth more than a dollar.
Yeah. We know.
Yeah.
Right, but I'm saying it's not 20. Actually, maybe it is kind of close to 20 right now. I just picked a random number, but like...
See, what we try to do sometimes on this podcast is we're like, oh, what if we did like a thing and then DJ corrects it?
It's 1736 in USD.
God, shut up. Speaking of Patreon, by the way, guys, we recently crossed the 300 patron mark, so that's kind of exciting, and it means that we are we're very close. I think a week and a half away now from being at the level where we need to be, where we all eat the spicy chips. Somebody was explaining to me in Discord the other day how they're measured, and the company that
Scovilles.
Yeah, they were teaching you about how your Buffalo Wild Wings argument was garbage.
It wasn't, it's different, man. This is one chip, not a bowl of wings. Tell them what's the thing. What's the unit of measurement, Jason?
It's called a Scoville, and I think one Scoville is equivalent to 1 cubic centimeter of water required to wash the taste out of your mouth or something like that.
Wait, are you serious?
Sounds highly scientific.
Is that a real thing?
Well, they talk about things being measured in millions of whatever this unit is.
Yeah, which doesn't make much sense to me.
Yeah, it seems very stupid.
You just got to have a whole Olympic-sized swimming pool and just put your mouth in it.
So apparently one of the chip that we're doing, I think, is like 1.2 million what is it called?
Scoville.
Scoville. Yeah, okay, it's like 1.2 million. But the company that released them, I guess, recently came out with like a 1.9 million or something.
See, the pepper is 1.2 million, I thought, right?
So maybe the chip's like 1.5, and
it's
then
a,
the new chip
it's,
is 1.9.
Is it a ghost pepper?
It's a or Carolina
is it like a
Scotch
Reaper,
bonnet?
Is what they call that. Oh, it's Carolina a Carolina Reaper, Reaper, really. Yeah, the Carolina Reaper, I think, is 2 million Scoville, but I don't think the chip is. I think the chip is significantly less.
I'm down for the chip. I think we're on the like 1.2 or 1.5 million chip. Whatever that means.
Jesus,
one of our listeners in Michigan offered to send me the peppers and just we would just eat a ghost pepper.
No, man, I'm scared of eating a pepper, though. That's dangerous.
But a ghost pepper wouldn't be as bad as a Carolina Reaper chip, I don't think.
I'm reading the back. Okay, so I'm on eBay right now, and I'm looking at the seller who is likely going to get $210 from us at some point in the next few weeks. They have 100% positive feedback, so your money's not going to waste. They're asking $70, buy it now. Or wait, we can best offer on this. We can MTG finance our way out of this.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Okay.
What does it say about the chip?
I am reading the back of the sealed package. Okay. Do not eat if you are sensitive to spicy foods, allergic to peppers, nightshades, or capsaicin. Or are pregnant or have any medical condition. Keep out of reach of children. After touching the chip, wash your hands with soap and don't touch your eyes.
Touch your dick. They say your eyes, but nobody is going to touch their eyes. You're going to touch your dick.
Or other sensitive areas.
That is terrifying.
Nutrition facts.
Oh, yeah.
Serving size, one chip, 2.5 grams, 10 calories. a lot of zeros on here for vitamin C, calcium, iron. Reaper ingredients: ground corn, canola oil, Carolina Reaper pepper, ghost pepper, sea salt, chipotle pepper powder, yeast extract.
I like chipotle.
The chipotle and I love that the ghost pepper powder like dilutes the potency of the Carolina Reaper powder. I love that. It's like, we're gonna take it easy on you and just give you ghost pepper powder.
Well, this will be fun.
2 minutes into macing him in the eyeballs, I switched to pepper spray. He's like, that's all right, refreshing. It went back to the mace. I don't know what accent that is, what region. I don't know.
I can't wait to do these chips, man. They're going to be great. But that's one chip.
That's another clip. No. JJJ, that's another clip. Play all of those, like, I can't wait for this. This sounds exciting. All over Corbin's regret.
Oh, God, when he's crying and, like, spooning ice cream into his mouth and his nose is running.
I regret nothing. I could have milk.
Ooh, I can't wait for this. Ooh, I can't wait for this. Court is praying for this sweet release of death. He has a spicy fever dream about rotting in an El Camino with Satan. This lava pours into his mouth. He's just hallucinating into his camera. If you start hallucinating, do not get out of your chair. You stay right in frame.
Wow, this is going to be it's going to be fun.
We're going to get so much value out of our squatty potties with these chips.
God, that's true. Speaking of, www.squattypotty.com/BSB. And I noticed they actually, the last time I went there, it even had like a little screen that came up and said like,
it said we're applying your coupon code.
Yeah, so to let you know. So
We wanted you to stagger a little bit so we didn't sell all the Squatty Potties the first week. If you haven't gone to squattypotty.com/BSB, now is a good time. I think they're under $20 a piece. They really work. Yeah. Just please use our coupon code.
But for real, don't embarrass us.
Don't have to be sponsored by a store.
We want to look good.
Well, hang on.
And not have them be like, why did we burn money on you guys? So we need to sell some Squatty Potties.
In case you haven't visited the link yet, I just did it for you. You don't have to buy a Squatty Potty. You can also buy toilet foam, which is a wet wipe alternative. You can buy toilet spray to slay your sink. That's on sale right now for $6.99. The 2.0 adjustable toilet stool for $5 more. So $29.99 instead of $24.99.
Oh, so they aren't under $20. Even with our coupon code?
Some of them are.
Okay.
Don't forget about the poop emoji plunger.
Look, all jokes aside, it's actually a good product and it works. Otherwise...
Oh, they sell bidets. I might actually need to buy one of these.
What?
Yeah.
A bidet? Yeah. Cool. So, squattypotty.com/BSB.
Are you exclaiming your excitement at the fact that... Or, like, I can't tell if I'm being judged for thinking about buying a bidet or if you're excited about buying a bidet.
I'm judging you always.
Corbin has an Oklahoma bidet, which is just a kiddie pool out in his yard.
I do have a kiddie pool.
Well, there you go. Anytime you go out to the yard without pulling your pants up because you just went to the bathroom and then use the bidet, it's called the Oklahoma Shuffle.
There is no shuffling in Oklahoma.
Doesn't it make more sense for you to walk with your pants around your ankles out to the yard? That's the Oklahoma Shuffle?
This is terrible.
I don't remember what the beer with the spoon thing is.
That wasn't it. Good call.
That wasn't it. No, the Oklahoma Shuffle is clearly walking with your pants around your ankles. So now you know.
I did that once at the airport on accident. It's like running to catch a flight and my pants just fell down to my ankles because they were too loose.
Because your belt was still in that little box.
Great story number three in the box.
That is a good story. That's a funny story. Anyways, I guess we could talk about magic on our Magic the Gathering podcast. What do you guys say?
This is not a magic podcast.
At this point, it's not even worth it. Let's cut this out. We tried.
We tried. We couldn't get there. 20 minutes in, we didn't make it. We could talk about Battle Bond and how we're really bad at knowing what cards are good. What do you think?
We're good at knowing which cards are good. We called Greater Good, which has increased like 4%. We called the other green season. One that I can never remember.
I said Arcane Artisan was a good card. I compared it to a blue Elvish Piper, and you guys laughed at me.
Yes.
You called me a numbskull. So you are I just want to put it out there that I called it.
Elvish Piper is currently like a $2 card.
Legacy play. How much Legacy play does Elvish Piper see, man?
In blue decks?
For people who don't know, we're talking about, what's the name of the card?
Arcane Artisan.
Arcane Artisan and Brightling, both of which apparently are getting some Legacy hype and have jumped up in price as a result. It's possible this is the best Morphling printed and is going to be good in Death and Taxes, or it's possible that Death and Taxes is a moderately cheap deck that people have a lot of pieces of, so they rush to buy it out.
Or it could be both, and that's why it went from, like, $3 to $30, because, like, apparently the Death and Taxes guy, like, the one who does all the streaming with the deck, the person, the singular individual who makes the most Death and Taxes content, has put his stamp of approval on Breitling after playing a significant number of matches with the deck, so...
I'm willing to wait until we see results, because... The thing about streamers and people on YouTube and all this stuff is that especially when you focus in on one deck, is that there is a natural push to do something fresh and new to generate excitement or viewers, and all that's fine. We've seen cards slot into decks in Modern especially, but also in Legacy, where people will kind of flavor the month it, and then 2 months later, you're back to the stock list of 6 months ago. So... I would be careful about buying into the hype on Brightling and Death and Taxes.
Well, yeah, you obviously don't buy it anymore. That's not what any of
well,
us...
Well, but I'm saying if you're a Legacy player, though, it's actually something you're considering this week. And I'd wait for some results before putting any money into spiking Legacy cards.
Yeah!
Because, for instance, Leovold would have been this kind of thing a year or two ago or 3 years ago, whenever the heck it was printed. And it just went up in price and stayed up in price. So, I mean, that is a question I'm sure people are asking themselves about Brightling. Anyways, Battle Bond hoops. Breaking Bolt time.
Well, everyone's really excited about, like, Death and Taxes, and, like, people are talking about Caracas. Like, where do you guys see Caracas ending up?
Like, 75-80.
It's like 75-80 right now.
I sold some for, like, 60-something yesterday, so...
That's cool.
Let me just furiously check my TCG store. No, it's like 65. You can buy them for 65.
Works for me.
It's funny how TCG low sometimes is like so much below market price, but that's like what we're going to sell it at.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the number we all know, because that's how TCG low is what matters to me, because I just want to be the cheapest. I want to post it and just get it out.
Get rid of it, exactly.
Yeah, and, I mean, while we're on the subject of Caracas and, like, differences in TCG player pricing, just so everybody knows, if you want to look up Caracas and the market price says 53, but the lowest listing is 65, that's just because the market price is based off of recent sales data, and it just means that there haven't been enough people buying at the new price to just sort of change the metric yet. So
not overnight. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, people are still buying Caracas at the new price. I can say that because I've sold several at the new price over this weekend. And it was a very hot card at the event I worked this past weekend. But, like, the TCG market price just hasn't moved yet. It will. And the TCG low is usually one of the better options to go by. But that's just a little tidbit of information about those.
On spiking cards, TCG low is the best metric. Absolutely.
Unless it is, like, the only listing available and it is a bought-out card. Like, if something goes from 5 to 40 and you're like, oh, the TCG low is $37, then obviously the card's price hasn't been found yet. There is no real
price. There's a difference between bought-out and spiking, right?
Yes.
Like, if somebody has done a buyout to clear out the TCG player inventory and all that's left is whatever that person or whoever else has listed, then that is not. But when a card is just naturally moving up, the low is the most indicative price.
Yes.
All right, breaking bulk.
Breaking bulk time. Breaking bulk time. Break.
Oh, yeah, breaking bulk. There's so much good stuff.
It's a pick. Breaking bulk. The end.
Breaking bulk. Break.
DJ, what do you got?
Strongholds, black card that has
nobody
never,
knows.
ever.
Tortured existence.
Been reprinted. It's not tortured existence. I'm not going
easy. Is it rare or uncommon?
It's uncommon. It is a black uncommon from Stronghold that has never been reprinted that is over $1.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's not tortured existence. Mm-mm.
It's an uncommon. Tortured existence is a common that is legal in Pauper. This has no Pauper relevance, but it is a casual dirt kitchen table card.
Stronghold black common, huh?
Uncommon.
No, uncommon.
I see.
I hear you typing, dude.
Oh, don't worry. I already said I don't know what it is. I'm no fucking Stronghold.
I know Megrim has been reprinted. Is it a wall?
It is a wall.
No, because...
Wall of Bone?
Why? Wall of Souls.
Not Wall of Bone. It is Wall of Souls, Jason. Good job.
Why? But why would it be Wall of Souls, though? Because I only know a few uncommon...
He's right. It's worth a dollar.
I mean,
this isn't even a DJ pick.
Jason, do you know what Souls of the Faultless is?
Yeah.
Very similar card.
When it is dealt combat damage, it deals...
But the only thing I was thinking is, like, why would a wall... When it can't go in the arcades
because
it's black.
Because it's going in those, like, casually pillar...
No, I get it. I wondered why you brought it up this week.
I mean, I don't see it as spiking. It has, however,
I'm not bringing it up because
forever.
It's spiking. I'm bringing it up because it's a breaking
bulk. It's worth a dollar.
The only reason I'm bringing it up this week is because this is one of those rare instances where I didn't know it was a pick until very recently. Because I haven't been picking
rare
these...
instances, guys.
What?
DJ didn't know it. Ooh. It's a rare instance.
I mean,
I'm willing to give him a little bit of slack on that one. I'll buy that.
Yeah,
DJ certainly knows the nickels better than we do.
I have passed over this card before, which is, like, not something that normally happens. So, like, it's something that I was... Normally, I'm like, oh, I can name every card in the set over a dollar. That's fine.
Wall of Souls is a 0/4 for 2, that when it's self-damage, you deal
combat
damage. When it's self-combat damage, it deals amount of damage to target opponent.
Yes. So
yeah, it seems pretty solid.
Yeah, it's like Souls of the Faultless, where these casual players are building their, like, Orzhov decks or, like, their blue-black decks that make their opponent's creatures attack with, like, Dulcet Sirens or whatever. They're very casual kitchen table decks, and it's just sort of like a card that lets you get them, and it's a card that's never been reprinted, and it probably sells pretty well on Amazon. It's just one of those really obscure things that nobody knows about, and it's the same reason I've passed over these in bulk a billion times, probably. It's just a very obscure card.
Sure. All right. I'm trying to... Jason, are you ready? I'm trying to check the spreadsheet to see if I've done mine before.
I got
so
one.
You can go ahead.
White Judgment Uncommon.
Battle Screech. No, that's... Yeah, Battle
no.
Screech. No, not Battle Screech.
That's like $4. Everyone knows about that. It got reprinted once.
In what?
I'm not going to tell you that.
White Judgment.
Okay, fine. It got reprinted in Conspiracy.
White Judgment
you
Uncommon.
Get it.
Wing
Unquestioned
Shards.
Authority.
Yeah.
It's not. Wing Shards is Scourge, Corbin.
Yeah, dude, that's Scourge. Yeah, Unquestioned Authority, when it comes into play, draw a card, which is pretty cool. But also, that gives a creature protection from creatures, which makes it essentially unblockable and unkillable by Royal Assassins.
It's like Spirit Mantle, kind of. But that's always been a pick.
Yeah, it's. It's just a good if you're playing some sort of Voltron thing, it's good. It draws a card to replace itself. It's just a solid card. It's almost a dollar despite being printed twice. These buy lists for like a quarter sometimes, and it's good to get a quarter for a card that you just got in bulk.
You can put it in an ogre box at a quarter, and some people will take it.
Yeah,
most will pass, but some will take it. And Card Kingdom will probably have it at a quarter every now and again.
That's why I like it. Send it to Card Kingdom, because when you do their trade-in bonus, it's more like getting 32 cents on it. So I really like that.
I had done my pick before, guys. Hold up.
Oh, Corbin. Why are you so bad at this game?
All right, I got you, fam. Battle for Zendikar, green uncommon.
Sylvan Scrying.
No.
I can picture the art, but maybe I'm thinking Broken Bond art, so maybe I don't know.
Battle for Zendikar.
It's not a big pick. This is a DJ pick.
Oh, so it's...
It's real cheap, but it is a DJ pick that is consistently... Barely above bulk. But it has consistently been a pick for me over the past year.
Oh, it's not half a cent. It's actually 2 cents. That's four times the bulk rate.
I think I get it. I mean, I think it's a nickel Byleth card. You know, it's a 25-cent rare or whatever.
Okay. But it is a creature?
It is.
Is it the giant hexproofy monster?
It is not.
Oh, actually, I don't know, dude.
DJ, giving up?
I'm thinking...
This should be right up DJ's wheelhouse.
Hey, look, I'm Corbin. Pay no attention to the typing noise.
That's CJ.
It's not.
It's Jason. Okay.
Yeah, why would it be you, Corbin? Nobody thinks it's actually
DJ,
you.
DJ, you got another guess?
It's your pick.
No, I can't think of it right now. I'll let you know if I know it, though. If it's something I don't know, I'll be, like, pleasantly surprised.
Is it Rot Shambler?
No, it is Jotty Offshoot.
Jotty Offshoot?
Oh, yeah, the wall, yep.
Well, it's a
or
wall.
Or land enters your battlefield under your control.
But it's been a pick.
Life.
It's been a pick.
No, yeah,
for,
I know.
Like,
it's the wall. Yeah. It's the one I've been picking. Yeah, it is a good one.
Yeah, it's like a quarter. You know, you get, I think, occasionally I've seen like 7-8 cents, but it's basically a nickel card. But it is, you know, probably worth keeping in mind. It looks like the market price on it's climbed a little bit over the past couple weeks. It is a defender. Who knows?
Picking
maybe it'll go.
Battle for Zendikar cards is awesome because nobody else takes them out. I'm glad you brought that up because, like, Battle for Zendikar is notoriously just awful for bulk common uncommon picks. It used to be, like, medium fine for standard because you'd get, like, decent standard cards in there, like Transgress the Mind and, like, Stasis Snare. But ever since BFZ rotated, it's just been, like, a gold mine for me personally, but just awful for anybody who's like, I'm only picking quarters or higher. And so there's a few gems in there that are slowly starting to creep up, like exactly Jotty Offshoot, like Drana's Emissary, like
Drana's Emissary is the big one.
Bane of Balaged and Breaker of Armies are both dimes. Like
Hedron Archive is great.
Yes, it got worse because it got commander decked.
Right, agreed.
But yeah, it's still fine. Like Battle for Zendikar has more dimes than everybody thinks, but it doesn't have like anything over a dollar.
Yeah, there's no the like token, super. The 5/5 token hit a dollar. It's the only one. Yeah. Next up is Hedron Archive. Yeah, it is a good one. I that and Shadows of Innistrad are better than people think in terms of just number of picks.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So next up, we got some emails later on here, but Jason reminded us. Yeah, we should probably talk about Commander archetypes. Jason, what are they?
Commander 2018, I guess, because M19 comes out before Commander 2018. Because
of course,
go fuck
obviously.
Yourself. We have four decks this time, and they have said that they're going to be a little higher in value. MSRP's gone up, but I think these will be good. The four archetypes we have been told about are Bant Enchantress. Or okay. Enchantments, I guess. Jund Lands. I don't know if that's
an
interesting fall
one.
Or
I would assume
that's
it's like Lands Matter.
Yeah, could
like,
be Lands Matter.
It would probably
could
have a lot of cards that look similar to say your Omnath Locus of Rage type deck,
or like Gitrog Mon. It's Omnath plus yeah. Gitrog had a baby. Both of those are likely in the deck.
Yeah.
Add that, yeah, because yeah, it could be two different directions you take that stuff. Is it Affinity / Artifacts Matter?
Interesting.
And I got ideas for everything but this last one, Esper Top Deck. I actually have no clue what could move based on Esper Top Deck besides something like...
Top.
Well, then top goes in the deck, probably. If it's not in the deck, that's real weird. What do they put in? Because they can't put in...
Lantern of Insight is probably in there.
Lantern could be
as
in
like
there,
a $5... Fifth Dawn common, like that's probably in there. I think there's probably a non-zero number of miracles, like Temporal Mastery, Terminus.
Yeah.
I think there's a very strong chance of them having a black miracle card. That'd be cool.
Why?
I mean, it's just design space that they might want to explore. No. That's it.
That's probably like, true.
It's just something they didn't do in Avacyn Restored. Some people liked the miracle mechanic a lot. This is like their only chance to do it. They might give us like a weird black miracle card.
I'm into Esper Miracles. Sounds kind of fun.
Yeah. So If you bought Portent and never sold them, you're screwed now.
There you go. Yeah.
Some stuff I see as candidates for reprinting. Enchantress's Presence.
Greater Oromancy's probably going to get
Sterling, hit. Sterling Grove.
Starfield and Nyx. Yeah, it has to be like I'm Sterling thinking,
Grove or Greater Oromancy, though. It's probably not both.
Yeah, depends what they do with the value.
Aura Shards, potentially.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're talking, in the this deck. Is adding up very fast here, though.
Rhystic Study, I can see.
Yeah, this is
like, they know that stuff is going to be like, oh, God, it's like $300, but then like it just...
I think Rhystic Study goes in like two decks.
Greater Oromancy is $35, yes. People. Like, yeah. This is a $45 commander deck, right?
It's 40.
Yeah, but Greater Oromancy goes to like 12.
But
if
they,
it's in
yeah,
the
they
deck,
don't
like...
necessarily. They don't have an...
the cards you named are just $100 in value on like four cards.
They don't.
They're not all going to be in the deck. I'm just saying, like, stuff to think about.
Yeah,
like Enchantress's Presence goes from like $12 to four, stuff like that.
Right.
Sarah Sanctum's already up at 150 on speculation, which is dumb because I told people to buy Sarah Sanctum when it was 35 when they did the Daxos deck, told me to go fuck myself. So. Replenish is like $60, and that's a reserve list, so that probably goes up. I'm thinking Sterling Grove could go in the deck, but if it's not, that's a $12 card.
Academy Rector is like the other free, like boring pick, I guess. But like
Idyllic Tutor is a card that probably goes to 30 if it's not in the deck. But just enchantments are the new kitty cats because this is everyone's like Jund Land Matters. What could that be? Yes,
right. Yeah.
Top deck. Oh, enchantments. That's got obvious stuff in it. I'm a genius. Buy all the kitty cats. So I think a lot of this stuff. I don't know. I think a lot of the reserve list stuff just went up again because everyone's like, I figured out how to finance. You just buy a card that's on the reserve list. Ooh, Femurif Enchantress. You know what Enchantress decks like? Having to destroy their enchantments to draw a card. Like, Femurif Enchantress going from, like, 25 cents to wherever it was a year ago felt like, okay, we're just buying everything on the reserve list. But now, we're buying everything on the reserve list again just because it has the name Enchantress in the title. Yeah. I play Femurif Enchantress in my enchantment deck, and it's okay sometimes, but I don't know that it would be good here. I think a lot of the major stuff, the reserve list stuff, is just out of reach for most people. They may give us some alternatives. Maybe not an alternative to Academy Rector or Sarah Sanctum per se, but maybe like an alternative to Idyllic Tutor.
Yeah, we'll get something similar. Variant for sure. We'll get some sort of like one-sided open the vault that just
I'm looking forward to that for my Oloro deck, that's for sure.
Well, I already have a Bant Enchantress deck, so if I get two new cards, it's worth the $40 for me.
Yeah, no kidding.
So stuff like Karmic Justice, that's like around $5, probably he gets hit again.
Martyr, what is it?
Martyr's
the six
Bond.
Mana version. Martyr's Bond, yeah.
That's a good.
I mean, this is too. A lot of value we're naming though. So,
but like,
yeah, keep in mind some of this stuff won't be there.
Oh, but they. I think they know that the stuff will come down and it'll be around MSRP total or like a little bit more for like a year. And then one of these decks will be like $100
right.
value in a year. So,
and then you buy that sealed deck like, while it's still $50.
Stuff like Bear Umbra like is good, but I like some stuff like Dueling Grounds, just to be in the deck. So like, I'm sort of like, coming up with my wish list for the deck plus my wish list for reprints. Something like Opalescence hasn't really popped yet.
Yeah.
And that's something that would be real good, but I don't think, as guy who's been playing Enchantress for 2 years, I don't think I'd play Opalescence in the deck when you get Starfield and X already. So maybe that's just one of those cards that everyone thinks should pop just on principle. I don't know. We spent a lot of time on Enchantress. The Land Matters one, the Jund Land one, a lot of the stuff that I think would be good in the deck just came off of reprinting. I'm thinking like Lotus Cobra, Remnant of Excavator, Crucible of Worlds, like Angry Omnath stuff. Splendid Reclamation hasn't even gone up yet. You look at, like, if you just go to EDH Rec and look at the Omnath deck and look at the Gitrog Monster deck, I think DJ's probably right about those kind of decks converging, and you kind of look at, I mean, we can predict a lot of stuff will get reprinted, like Perilous Forays is probably in the deck. A Boundless Realms reprint would be nice. Maybe a Titania reprint.
Realms
but
Uncharted.
Like, yeah, Realms Uncharted never really got there.
No, which is why I'm saying they're probably going to like jam it in the deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
This would be a nice place to reprint Azusa again. I'd love to see a $10 Azusa, but I don't know, because it just got reprinted. And
yeah, I don't know about that.
But like, it's not all hot rares. There's going to be usually 60% of the rares are pretty bulky.
You know, I would say,
and there's three or four or five really good rares that are like above $10 before it was printed. So,
well, yeah. At the risk of giving away a pick of the week, precluding from being able to claim it, Rome's Uncharted is actually climbing very steeply over the past month. And if it's not in the deck, it's one of those that could have a jump that may seem dumb until you realize it's Rise of Eldrazi, and that was actually a long time ago, and it's already been climbing.
Realms Uncharted is a card that I've called so many times, people don't even listen to me when I call it anymore.
Well, it did spike once to $3.
So, yeah. So like,
that was Gitrog Monster hype, yeah.
Yeah. I thought it would go up a little bit when Gitrog Monster came out. So, like, when all these, like, everyone's like, oh, well, a Kelp's got to be $25 because of Arcades. Gitrog Monster was a little more popular than Arcades is right now. And
yeah, well, we'll see about the play patterns between the two. I think Gitrog.
It's got to be useful in the deck, ubiquitous enough that like more than 75% of the people that build the deck are going to use it, and the deck has to be one of the most played decks built with the stuff from that set, and also the spec has to be obvious to a dumb person.
That is a lot.
I'm serious. Like, if you're going to have to wait 3 weeks and go dig deep on the EDH rec page to find the cards, like, oh, shit, Trade Roots is really good in Tatiova. It is. Trade Roots is better in Tatiova than Wall of Nets is in Arcades. But the spec also has to be obvious to a dumb person, because it's not just smart people buying the cards. It's everybody. It's dumb speculators buying 100 copies. It's, like, people that will buy the card, test it three times, and realize it doesn't go on the deck.
Players are just being slow putting their deck together. It's not just
So some of these cards we were like, well, it's obvious to me because I know a lot about the deck, plus I have a lot of data, plus I did a lot of research. You got to think, well, it's got to be obvious to a dumb person, because Storm Cauldron is under $1 right now, and with Tatiova and Omnath and all this Gitrog Monster and all this. You know, decks where a card like that isn't bad, the fact that something like Storm Cauldron that was printed most recently in what? 7th edition is under $1, but it's in, you know, like a couple thousand Omnath decks versus Wall of Nets, which isn't going to see play at all. It's tough to predict what other people are going to think is obvious. So you got to kind of think like an average player at the same time you're trying to outwit them. So speculation can be kind of tough sometimes. It's like sometimes some tech just doesn't catch on as much as you're like, wow, this would be really good. Everyone should play it. But if you're not the command zone, no one cares what your card recommendations are. So you got to kind of pick some more obvious picks sometimes. But you got to pick them before everybody else. So it's tough sometimes. But that's kind of what I'm looking at the Jund deck. And then, obviously, I think you just go on the EDH rec page for Jawara Weatherlight Captain and look at some of the stuff in there. I'm thinking there will be a mechanic that's not in a Jawara deck, because it'll be sort of like a hybrid of like play an artifact, draw a card type stuff, but also maybe Affinity. Speaking of Affinity, the Antiquities War was a 4-of in an Affinity deck that 5-0'd a Legacy thing on Modo. And I kind of like it because you're playing 4 Seat of the Synod and 4 Darksteel Citadel. And when you get to the 3 counters on Affinity War or the Antiquities War, all of a sudden your lands turn into 5/5s. And I think that's pretty cool. So I don't hate foils of the Antiquities War. It's only a rare, so I don't like the non-foils. They're like, they're never going to be above a buck. But maybe foils of the Antiquities War for that Legacy deck slash maybe the emerging Commander 2019 archetype. Thinking something like Micah Synth Lattice that just got reprinted is a good pickup, because I think the Battle Bond stuff is just... we're pretty much at peak supply of Battle Bond, which is why we're seeing Arcane Artisan and Brightling and stuff like that spike. So I like Micah Synth Lattice under $7. But like it's hard to... with all the artifact stuff, there's not a lot of reserve list stuff in the deck, so it's hard to figure out what is so good and obvious that it gets reprinted, and what's so good and obvious that it gets put in the deck after it's not reprinted.
Well, the hard thing about artifacts, too, in particular, is that there's just such a dense quantity of, like, generic good stuff for the deck that it's hard to pick something that will be ubiquitous enough to make the price increase, especially for foil.
Like, the right answer will probably be something stupid like Chromatic Lantern.
And this, some of the EDH decks are there are three different commanders, and you could build three different ways, you know, because the deck's kind of a hybrid of those three decks, and then you just pick one of the ways. And sometimes there's one really good way to build and two really terrible ones. I can see three good decks coming out of the artifact deck where you're like, wow, I want to build this and this. I want to build this affinity and I want to build this artifact landfall type deal. So that could be, it could be tough picking a winner when the people that build the red-blue deck get split three ways versus the people that build, you know. But if it's as popular as Atraxa, it doesn't. Atraxas get built 20 ways and all those cards are expensive. So I don't know. It's hard to pick a winner without seeing a single card yet. I kind of think the blue-red artifact one, if it's got a good commander, because everyone's like, Jawara is what we wanted, but Jawara kind of isn't what we wanted. It's just sort of a red Tatiova. So I kind of think if they do have a good artifact matters commander in blue and red, that's what people have been clamoring for forever. And I don't know what you guys said about miracles in the top deck. Sure. Whatever.
What's the blue card that I think it's a blue. No, I'm thinking of a green card. I thought it allowed you to look at your top three or something in your upkeep.
Miri's Guile.
That's green.
That's green. And I think that might be reserve list.
Miri's Guile is reserve list, I think.
Yeah. I like Miri's Guile a lot in male decks. It's one of the first decks I built. So, yeah, there's just a lot of stuff to look at. I would use EDH Rec as a resource. I know I harp on that a lot, and I sound like a shill, but honestly, I've been using EDH Rec since before they hired me. That's why they hired me, because I wouldn't shut up about what a great resource it is.
I just built my, I just finished the list of the new Nicol Bolas Ravager deck I'm making, and EDH Rec was very helpful. The one thing, I'll say this, that I didn't find, and just again, let me know if I'm wrong, is I found some other website that did it, although the website was kind of hard to navigate. I told it what my commander was, and it told me all the lands available. So EDH Rec is great.
ManaBaseBuilder.net.
Yeah, that might be it. Yeah. Yeah, it was something like that.
Well, EDH's got the
it shows you the most lands. Common, but, like, I know the most
Mana
common.
ManaBaseCrafter, yeah. ManaBaseCrafter.com.
Yeah. If you go to the average deck on EDH Rec, it'll tell you. But, yeah, like, ManaBaseCrafter is something that we were looking at.
Yeah, it was super helpful to me when I was just, like, sometimes I like to play weird lands in my decks. Or, you know, you don't remember all the random cards from Kamigawa that were in on color, but, or, you know, the last round of Commander's cards you missed or whatever. And it was very helpful. You know, the top 20 is obviously going to be the same lands everyone has, or fetch lands and shock lands, but I wanted to go a little deeper. So shout out to that website.
Well, also on EDH Rec, it'll tell you the articles that were written.
That's
that
cool.
Sort of contain that kind of stuff, because there was a series a guy was writing that like went really deep on lands, and like reading it, it was like, oh, I'm building Omnath, and this guy's got 10 lands that don't show up on the EDH Rec page
right. That
are really good in an Omnath deck. That's sort of why I started the articles in the first place, was for stuff that's missing from EDH Rec or is overrepresented,
yeah,
just to like, contextualize the data a little perfect. Bit. But yeah, ManaBaseCrafter, that's a site we actually like on EDH Rec, and
Sweet. We'd
like to work with them in some capacity. But that's a good recommendation too.
Great.
But yeah, just go to these pages. Like, think, let's look at Gitrog Monster and see what's in there. Let's look at Angry Omnath and see what's in there, and just kind of see what's showing up. Think about what could get reprinted, but think about what couldn't get reprinted also, because all the Enchantress stuff is pretty much, you know, Team Obvious has gone through and spike Sarah Sanctum to $150, and now what do we do? Well, you got to kind of look at the stuff that's not as obvious, and it's not going to spike as hard because, you know, you need Team Obvious to buy the copies from you. But I think if you're reasonably tuned in to what you would buy as someone building the deck, then I think you'll be able to figure out what people are going to play. And I recommend that if you're buying stuff to build the deck for yourself, buy twice as many copies as you would normally. Because that's how you predict spikes, is by picking out stuff that you would buy. So just buy more than you would buy normally, and then, oh, the price doubled. You paid for half the deck just based on, you know, having extra copies that you can sell, or you don't buy an expensive copy later. So that's something I like to tell people around Commander time of year. It's exciting. I'm going to be writing an article every week about Commander 2019 until you get sick of it. So look forward to that. That was a good main topic, boys. I talked solidly for 20 minutes.
No, that's good. I mean, you have the most information about this, so I'm looking forward to it. I actually have a preview card for the set, so I'm pretty hyped. I know EDH Rec got one, too.
Oh, yeah. We got EDH Rec's preview card will blow your socks off. You guys will be...
There you go. All right, DJ, give us a few emails before we get out of here this week.
All right. This email is from our favorite, or only, I'm not sure, $40 patron, Steven Kestner, taking advantage of the email option.
Good. Good.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm a $40 patron, so read this. What criteria do you use when deciding to buy a list versus to sell on a platform? I'm sitting on a nice spec box that is maturing, and I'm wondering how to determine which way to out-specs? Steven M. Kestner.
Well, I have a little bit of experience on this exact topic recently, in that I had a fecundity that had obviously spiked with Saperlings or whatever in Dominaria. And
wasn't it just like one printing of it, though? Like the Saga?
No, all of them spiked. Like it was four. Like
they all spiked, right? However,
and that spiked because of the Skirk Prospector. Slime.
Yeah, the Prospector.
It was a modern thing. It was like a Skirk Prospector.
The old Prospector. Ah, peaches.
Sure.
Nobody remembers Will Ferrell characters from 2002 but me. All right. That's
cool. Sorry, Jason.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It was so. Anyways, I have Fecundity. It was like $4. Cartini was buying it for 50 cents. So I felt pretty bad about that, right? That doesn't seem great. So I actually.
What's the point of even being right if you get 12% of its value? Why even be right?
Right. Well, I think in this case, I was. By the time I had found that one or whatever, I was a little behind the actual spike when they might have been paying, say, $1.50 or $2 at some point. But. I was like, okay, I'll list it on TCG Player, I guess, because I was listing like 20 cards on there, most of them expensive. And I ended up selling it for like $250. And then there's fees taken off, and then the envelope, and shipping, and all that. And by the end of it, I basically made $1.25 or something on the card. And it's like, yes, I did get more than, I did get 50 or 75 cents more, but I also had to like make a trip to the post office and just kind of have this additional responsibility in my life, and just kind of is annoying. Was worth literally 50 cents to me? Maybe not. So I think one of the big things is those things that when we talk about them in percentage numbers, that means a lot. And sometimes it sounds like a lot and it should, but also the real value means a lot. You know, the difference between selling one of the other ones I was looking at recently was like a foil Ravnica Glimpse of the Unthinkable. And the TCG player price that I would get for it was kind of significantly higher than the Card Kingdom buy list price by a bit. So I'm like, oh, I should list it. So the thing is, that might have the same percentages between the spread between the buy list and retail as that Fecundity did, but it means a lot more when it's, you know, 10% of $20 or $30 instead of $3.
If a stamp and an envelope and a top loader is like 40% of the value of the card, then that's a little bit different than it.
Yeah.
The first is that you ship. How many orders, Corbin? Just that one?
Yeah, in this case, that's the one.
Right, and I'm not saying this as like a brag or whatever, but like I have 40 orders to ship tomorrow for TCG Player. So for me, that is like just one, that's another drop in the bucket. Like it's not an additional responsibility. Right. So if that is your situation where you are listing a non-zero number of cards on TCG Player and processing like maybe 5-10 orders a day, adding on one more to that and expecting just having that sort of cycle of like, I'm going to get my orders, I'm going to ship out on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, it's going to be a thing. Like, that additional trip to the post office is much less of a factor to you.
Cost you nothing.
The other question, the other comment on your little story is for that Glimpse of the Unthinkable story, like, the percentage might be higher on that Glimpse of the Unthinkable and so might the dollar amount, but that individual card, the foil Ravnica Glimpse, is ass to sell. It's going to take months.
Oh, of course.
That individual card is just going to take forever. It's like a casual dirtily card that like people don't buy foils of, and then when they do, they want the IMA one. So like, it's just really hard to sell that individual foil because it's such a casual card, and the number might be theoretically high, but it might be in your best interest to like, let's just, I don't know what the number on the card is. I'm assuming it's like what, 40?
Sure.
So like, if I remember, let's say it was falling. Yeah. So like, you list on TCG, it sells in like 4 months for $40, or you buy listed Card Kingdom, take the $24, use that $24, put it in other specs, put it in solid investments, turn it into more money, and then like over the course of those 4 months, your $24 helps buy a collection or helps get put into a commander deck or whatever. Like, the money is churned more quickly and turned into more things than that foil glimpse sitting on your desk. All of this is subjective to your personal situation and depending on how many cards you're moving, what your most like effective ROI is. I just bent these cards in half. Whoops. And so yeah, all that stuff is just dependent on your own personal situation.
For most people, just buy list it. Yeah. It's going to feel like, yeah, I should be getting more for this, but should you? And what would it take?
Just buy listed. It's so much easier.
Because when people are like, what's the easiest way to get the full value out of my collection? I was like, you're asking two different questions. Do you want the easiest or do you want full value?
Yeah.
So think about that. Sometimes I've been, honestly, I haven't sold much on TCG Player in the last couple of years because buy listing's just been way easier.
Yeah, me too.
I go to one or two companies. I fill up a 1,000-count box. I jam it full of nickels until I can't fit another card in there, and I send it off in a flat rate box. Put it in the mail. It's been real easy. And I'm leaving money on the table doing that. But you know what I'm not doing is going to the post office Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So
yeah, exactly.
For whatever you're doing in your life, whatever you want the time for, sometimes it's just, hey, what if I just took this whole big old stack of cards, sent it to Card Kingdom, got a traded bonus, turned it into a piece of power.
All right, DJ, hit us with the next one.
This is a powerful responsibility. I get to decide who's. Let's pick this guy. Patreon email questions from Aaron Mondata.
Okay.
Hey, Brew Crew and regular guest DJ. All right, trash, delete. Prerequisite note about being a $20 Patreon. Many of your pick of the week choices are cards that are relatively cheap, as in under $5. I've heard other finance podcasts indicate that they would avoid cheaper specs since they have to sell a larger inventory to make the same gain from one higher end pick like a Masterpiece Soul Ring. What do you think is...
What other finance podcasts are there?
I assume this sounds like a Fast Finance piece of advice.
He said Masterpiece Soul Ring.
What do you think the right minimum price threshold is for buying into specs? A while back, I bought a number of assembled legions based on Jason's pick from May 2017, and am quickly realizing that even if these double in price, the price gain will be minimal. One more quick question. Do vendors at GPs typically buy anything other than Magic? I have a first edition Charizard from the early 90s, looking to potentially trade it into some revised duels or other high-end reserve list cards. The best price I've seen in Abios is from Troll and Toad at just under $2,000, but I would feel more comfortable dealing with someone in person. Are there better outs that I might be missing? Thanks for the great cast. Can't wait to see DJ die when he eats the spicy chip. P.S. I was really disappointed when you guys were finally sponsored by Squatty Potty. I was hoping to get you to sponsor my cheap knockoff, the Stool Stool.
He already made the Stool Stool joke on the podcast for one. Two, the price increase is minimal if it doubles because it's a cheap card, but cheap cards don't double. It sounds like, why don't you just go buy a piece of power and be like, yeah, I'm good at this. Three, I already made the Stool Stool joke. Anyway.
I would say that you have to keep in mind that our average listener is not some high-end fancy, I'm going to go drop hundreds of dollars on specs. They're a Magic player who goes FNM every week, who's building new commander decks, who tries out pet cards, who wants to play mono for cheap, wants to stretch the value of their collection. That's kind of who the cast is directed to. And we obviously talk about the expensive stuff too, but I think it's not, most people aren't spending $200 on a spec. They're not spending $100 on a spec. Right, they're not buying one card for $75 and hoping that it doubles in price. They're trading for stuff at FNM. They're picking stuff out of binders. They're thinking about what to hold back from collections when they buy it. They're talking about what in their own collection they don't want to sell. And the example you brought up, a Symbol of the Legion, I thought was a pretty good one. Right, it did spike. Right, it went from 75 cents to $2, and that doesn't necessarily mean a lot. You know, if you're lucky, you can get $1.25 or something on them from Card Kingdom or $1. You make some money on them for sure. But also maybe you just wanted them for your deck and you know, this one went to two. There's a million other, you know, cards we talk about that go from two or three to ten. And it's, sometimes it's about making money on those things, but sometimes it's just about being ahead of the curve for yourself as a player. That's kind of what at least we view the audience as being primarily made up as, is those sort of players. So there's more value to the cheap spec to them than there is, you know, if we're looking at raw dollar terms with the high-end stuff.
Yeah, go tell someone who trades stocks on Wall Street that a 100% gain is minimal.
Well, yeah, there's that. I mean, yeah, but that's the point, right? Is that
right? But then that goes back to
there's effort to get out of it, and you're losing value with your stamp or whatever, and buy less thing. We just talked about that with the last email. I get it, but like, what's your goal?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you have the capital to it, the other thing is like, if you have the capital to invest in a $300 soul ring that goes to four, you also have the capital to buy like 500 assembled legions at a dollar, and then when they go to two, that's a lot more of a like profit increase.
Well, and also real talk, like most people who are going to spend, let's say $200 on any given spec that a podcast talks about, probably don't need the podcast in the first place. Right? Like, this is not to say there's not value to it, but you're just arbitrarily closing off your audience for very little reason, right? You want your cast to be applicable to the most people, and if you're talking about cards that the average Magic player can't buy, you're not doing that. So that's kind of my take.
Yeah, there is value to us talking about, like, higher-end stuff, but the majority of our picks and our things are, like, directed towards players who...
Right, so in terms of... You know, a level, like if I look at a card and I think a card's a dollar and I think it basically as high as it's going to go is two, I might make it a pick of the week sometime just for the players who want to pick it up. I like to highlight cards that are bottoming out from older sets that are, you know, newer sets that way as they get old. But in general, I won't necessarily go buy a bunch of a card under a dollar unless I think it's going to go to three or four. I did buy, I think Jason, or it was DJ talked about Guest Grimoire last week. I did buy, I think, a two play sets of those because I wanted one for deck, but... Also, that's the kind of thing I just want to stock in my store.
It's the kind of thing you want when people start building their Nicol Bolas decks.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, in fact, I think I was already asked for one at the store this week. So that's the thing, right? It's a, generally, for me, the sweet spot is something like $2 to $10. A dollar below, unless you think it's really going somewhere, is more one of those. You just pick it up.
But dollar cards don't tend to double. Because if it's under a dollar, it's because no one's playing it.
Right, they tend to go
and if
to
it
four
goes
or five.
Up, it's because someone's playing it, and they don't tend to just right. to merely
they,
double.
They tend to go to three to five or something, and then you get $2 for them, and you get double up on it, and it's pretty easy to buy 20 assembled legions and then double up on them and make, you know, $30 or whatever. But that's, you know, that's the thing. Is you do need them to go to three or four. All right, one more email. We're running to pick of the week here. Pick of the week it is.
I was going to say one more email, but that's cool.
All right. Now, let's do pick of the week. We'll save the emails for next week. I'm sure we're going to have a few more slow weeks here in the summer before we get fully into the hype. I'll go first because I like
the hype of what?
Commander, probably. All right?
Okay.
That'd be the next thing.
Yeah.
Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Time for the pick of the week.
I want to talk about Masters 25 a little bit with this. So you might not...
This was supposed to be our main topic tonight. Now you're turning into a pick of the week.
Well, it was going to be a pick of the week regardless. But so I want to note that there are 12 cards in Masters 25 worth more than $10 right now. And interestingly, 9 of those are almost $20. So... That's where we're starting, right? Keep in mind that Eternal Masters is the one I look to for reference. There's only 16. It's not that much more, and that's a set we look at as having good value. And I haven't looked up Iconic Masters to compare, but my point is everyone just remembers how quote-unquote bad Masters 25 was because of the Tree of Redemption and all that stuff. But they are the cards...
That's why you don't listen to the internet.
The cards are bottoming out right now, and there are still good cards in this. Rishon Import, Blood Moon, Azusa, Thalia, Pact of Negation, all at rare, not to mention the land cycle, the filter land cycle, which were all $20 cards before. This set has some real stuff, and it even has value in the commons and uncommons with Lightning Bolt and Utopia Sprawls and Simming Spirit Guides and Street Race. Like, these are $3 uncommons we're talking about here. So I just want to point out, just as a note, a PSA, this is bottoming out. And I know the only thing you remember about this set is how bad everyone said it was. But from a value perspective, it's not as bad as you think. That said, my pick of the week is Phyrexian Obliterator, because you can get it for about $15 right now.
And, yeah, but what plays it?
Well, it was here's the thing about the card. It was very expensive before. Right? It was like $30 or $35 or something.
Predicated on scarcity, and it spiked because it got played in that one mono black deck that never panned out.
It stayed because of casual, and then,
It was worth money for a reason, and the fact that it has bottomed out the way it has and begun to rebound tells me, at least I think, that the card is at a bottom. Now, whether it explodes back up to 30, I don't know, but it seems to me, looking at the graph,
it barely moved. Its all time high was what?
It was 35.
35, it's, and then its all time low is 17. Yeah.
The market price on the new Phyrexian one is $15.26. I think they're just going to be a slow climber back up to 20-25, and then who knows, maybe 30, right? But the thing is, we talk a lot about people waiting to get their cards when a set comes out, right? Wait for it to drop, wait to hit peak supply, then pick them up. Well, I'm telling you that's where we're at with Phyrexian Obliterator. And, if it doesn't double, I'm okay with that. But pick of the week is also an opportunity to talk about cards that are worth picking up right now. And if you want a Phyrexian Obliterator, now's the time to do it.
Well, this set has a $5 Gisela right now. It's got a $6 Rugged Prairie. It's like all those lands are under $10 right now.
Yeah, it's a set.
It's got a $10 Animar. It's
better than you think.
And there's, since the value is not concentrated in one or two cards that are bound to rebound, it's concentrated in 20 cards that are bound to rebound, which means the whole set's going to go up. Like, it's like a $500 set right now. I think it goes up a lot because Azusa is bound to go up a lot with a Jund Lands Matter deck coming out. Plus, people still building Tatiova because that's, people still bailing Omnath. I think Azusa at 20 is pretty nuts. That's probably the lowest it'll ever go. You got Blood Moon, which gets bought four at a time. You got Port, which gets bought four at a time. You got Ensnaring Bridge, which gets bought four at a time. You got Chalice of the Void, which gets bought four at a time. So, Eidolon.
Yeah, the set, the set is surprisingly gas looking back at it now.
But there's one bad mythic.
Tree of Redemption.
So don't listen to players. Just look at the set and look at how many different cards going up by $3 or $4 makes.
And I'm not saying this is the end all, really attractive. Pickups right now. I'm just saying that it seems to have.
Well, the stuff looks like it's bottomed out, because we talked a while back about when we thought Iconic Masters bottomed out, and I was like, I think $2.50 or $3 or whatever on, what was it? The Austere Command looked pretty good, and that's at like $6 right now. So obviously the stuff was at the bottom then. So we're seeing the same opportunity here for Masters 25. Go for it.
All right, you guys. Who wants to go next?
Mine's boring.
Okay, what is it?
Vanquisher's Banner.
Yeah.
Interesting. You think there's not just too many of them out there?
I think Ixalan,
I don't think it matters,
got opened a lot less than other people think it did. I think that after
still
rotation...
A false set, right?
It did. It was. But it was also a fall set that had a much lower power level compared to Kaladesh and Aether Revolt, which just tended to dominate the entire standard format the past couple years.
Yeah, I'm with you.
There was a lot of banning and unban. There was a lot of unrest, Ramanop Red, bannings, just every energy banning. It was all just Ixalan was opened a lot less than people think it was. So was Rivals of Ixalan. So I guess my overarching pick is just those cards from those two sets for standard. If you want them, get those $2 to $3. What's it? Dumb Dinosaur. Ripjaw Raptor, I think that's a good card. Vanquisher's Banner is my safer pick, just because I don't think it ever goes down from where it's at now. It did get a little bit of an ancillary printing in the Explorers of Ixalan product, but I don't think that holds it back at all. It's just a card that's going to go from 3 to 310 to 325 to 345, and then a year from now it's probably a $5 card, and then it's almost like Panharmonicon, where it's worth something not because of what it's doing in standard, but just the fact that it's going to just be a slow gainer. Every copy that goes in gets sucked in and doesn't come out of like a tribal casual kitchen table deck. It's just something to keep an eye on. Like, this is just a very safe place to put money. I like this at 3 a lot more than I like Guild of Lotus at 3. I'll tell you that right now.
But this is the Sets Pan Harmonicon for sure. And like,
if you told me, you like, gun to my head, I have to buy 100 Guild of Lotuses or 100 this, I buy 100 of this in a heartbeat.
Well, Gilded Lotus seems more likely to get reprinted again. Also, well, this, like, doesn't seem like
I think reprinted. The opening of Dominaria is probably like double what Ixalan got opened.
I don't know. I can't dispute that with facts. Neither can but like, just that sounds a little hyperbolic. I don't but think like, that's hyperbolic. Maybe not that much. Maybe not that much. Cool. My pick of the week is predicated on a card that I think will be good in Enchantress decks, but not good enough to be obviously reprinted. I like a card from Invasion that is a rare called Dueling Grounds.
I like Dueling
Grounds. I just sold my last like 2 or 3 of those on TCG over the past like week.
Now people are building, they were building Miri decks. Miri was probably the best way to go from that stupid cat precon. But what about all my waiting in the weeds, Jason? I bought all my foil Jared, Leon, and Titan so it couldn't get reprinted. I'm the kitty cat master. Nah, I think Miri is the way to build that deck, and I think Dueling Grounds is super good in that deck. I actually had one of Dueling Grounds in the sideboard of my Legacy Maverick deck, and hey, maybe Maverick makes a comeback.
I think Dueling Grounds is a good makes pick.
This. I think every...
Yeah, no more than one creature may attack each turn.
If you're looking for clips for episode 300, JJ, find every pick of the week Jason says where it ends with, and I think Maverick makes a comeback.
Whatever, man. Maverick will make a comeback.
That's 2 clips for this episode. Nice.
Maverick will live again. We got rid of the Deathrite Shaman that was holding us down.
Yeah, we'll see. Dueling Grounds, though, is a great pick. It's $4 right now. It's
now people would rather be like, I want the budget option, and I want the Death and Taxes deck with the $50 Rashidun ports and the $40 Brightlings. I don't want the $5 Dueling Grounds and the $1.75 Knight of the Reliquaries.
Knight is worth more than that.
$1.75.
It's like $10, man.
Knight's $5.
It got reprinted a lot.
The last reprint.
Yeah,
it's like $6 right now.
It's probably my favorite Magic creature. So
yeah, I love that card.
I like me some Dueling Grounds, and I think it's like a better crawl space. If you're an Enchantress, you're like, well, cool. Attack me with your one creature, and then I'll steal it with Rubinia. Yeah, cool.
There you go.
So yeah, for Ban Enchantress, I don't think that Dueling Grounds gets put in the precon. I think I picked a card that is old. It's old border. It's unlikely to get reprinted, but it is likely to get some more attention with a Ban Enchantress. So yeah. That was a real narrow list of cards to pick from, but I like that one.
All right, there you go, everybody.
Corbin likes it too. That means it's probably wrong.
No, I've been killing it on Pick of the Week lately. I've let everyone catch up with this first and Obliterator pick because it's going to be a slow burner. That's how it goes. Okay. Man. That's all there is to
it. Did DJ pick one?
I went with Vanquisher's Banner.
Oh, that's right.
I told you it was boring. You forgot it already.
That's right.
I told you I was going to drink a whole bomber of bourbon barrel-aged black cherry porter from Short's Brewery.
So. Yeah, Corbin, not all of our picks more, can be benefactors breweries. Drought.
We need more breweries sponsoring us after Jason.
Oh, Short's sponsoring us would be cool. I should tell them I drink Soft Parade every week.
Hey, reach out to them, man.
Also,
looking at the sponsorships.
Looking at the spreadsheet, can we give Corbin a round of applause for not missing like 7 episodes in a row? This is a record.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. You guys are just lucky I spent as much time.
The last episode Corbin missed was on May 21st, and he's been just... He's been late like 4 hours every episode, but he has been here. Rain or shine.
I beat Jason on tonight.
No, you didn't. We went on at the exact same time. We both answered the call. I just had my mic plugged in.
That's fair.
You know why I didn't plug my mic in, Corbin? Because I figured it would be another hour before
you. So I was
up.
Ready to go before you.
Oh.
Were you? Because you talked about stupid shit for 20 minutes, and I didn't want to do that. So I feel like I was ready to podcast before you were. You were ready to talk, but you weren't ready to talk Brainstorm Brewery.
Isn't Brainstorm Brewery just stupid shit that we talk about anyway?
Brainstorm Brewery!
You did it. You shut down his argument.
We made it 300 episodes. I don't know
which
how.
Which is really like 312.
Hey, listen.
Between the,
that's a good point.
Between
that's a good
the, point. The between the hang-up episodes, like, to get us to 299 to 300 or 199 or 99, et cetera.
Oh, and
the
man. Ones we were probably on, like, 310.
The ones we recorded, but didn't... And but
that happened
but
twice.
Didn't get recorded. I say the ones that we talked and didn't get recorded, yeah.
Uh-huh. That happened two times.
It did.
Look, if you don't want to go to patreon.com/brainstormbrewery and give us money to have access to our tokens, our playmats, our... handsome drinking glasses that we're getting from the original company because I sent them an email and saying nice. We fired Marcel. Yeah. So we're going to get the good glasses back. The double-sided one, like the one I'm holding
or
here.
Or they'll just
the ones
like,
that can
hold
go
a grudge
your dishwasher.
Against us and just send us they, shitty glasses.
No, they won't. They're professionals and they, our money's
us.
Green. Yeah, unlike us. If you don't want to go through all that hassle and become our patrons, or go to squattypotty.com/BSB, use our coupon code to buy toilet foam or a squatty potty, which
an
I'm
emoji,
buying one for every...
A poop emoji plumber. Plunger.
A poop emoji plunger. Yeah, I'm going to buy a squatty potty for every toilet in my house because I believe in the product. If you don't want to do all that, what you can do to support us for $0 is just go to youtube.com/BSB and just click like and subscribe and then that bell icon... That'll tell you when we've got a new episode. We'll send you a notification. Just finger blast that into oblivion. Just take that bell icon and just pretend it's high school. Just finger blast that
wow,
thing.
There you go.
So, you know what? That's a $0 way you can support this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. But we happen to know that in terms of percentages, like the number of people subscribed to our YouTube channels, like single digit percentage of like our total listenership. So if you could just take the 1 second to go to youtube.com/BSB and just like and subscribe there and let's get our YouTube numbers up. What if we could actually have our videos monetized? Wouldn't that be something? We wouldn't have to shill for poop companies.
Well, we would.
Guys.
Yeah, our brain bites would become 10 minutes, and you'd be like, this does not need to be 10 minutes. This is interminable.
Yeah,
we're
so
like, we got to get monetized.
So you get the optimum
yeah.
amount of monetizing.
Guys. As a closing thing, I'd like to mention that I am still...
That your microphone hasn't worked the whole episode and we lost it.
No, that I am still on the eBay listing for this Carolina Reaper chip. And I just scrolled... No. I scrolled... We might all die. We might all perish because of this chip. Because I'm reading the description now. And follow along with me here. This is the original... Packy Carolina Reaper chip one chip or Carolina Reaper one chip challenge that was released in 2016. Therefore, since the expiration date has long passed, this is now for collector's purposes only.
Oh, we should not get that one.
No, what's gonna happen? You're gonna get diarrhea more?
No, I'm not eating the chip past the expiration date, man.
What does the expiration date even mean? It means that it'll be less efficacious.
No,
the capsaicin will have denatured.
And that's like people who try to drink like Crystal Pepsi or whatever, and
throw
it all up because it's not safe past the expiration date.
Corbin, do I have to teach you 4 years of science?
I'd prefer if you didn't. I have
Look, it'll be fine. If anything, the chip will be weaker.
Reason.
If anything, the chip will be weaker.
We're going to die.
We're not going to die. We're going to be like,
this isn't as bad.
Idea.
We should just get a not expired chip.
Then we'll get a pepper. Why don't you bite into a ghost pepper?
We're getting
is that
chip,
what you want?
Man, it's not called the one pepper challenge. It's called the one chip challenge. We're getting chips, but they're not going to be expired.
Get a pepper, put it in a wood chipper, and put your mouth over the wood chipper. Ah, the one chipper challenge.
That's it. That's the name of the episode, and we're done. Goodbye.
I guess that's your friend Aaron, the wood chipper.
One chipper challenge was good. It was good.